Hello, I'm Femi Okay. Welcome to the stream. Since mid-February, we have seen millions of Ukrainians streaming out of their country, fleeing from war. For Ukrainians with disabilities, this journey is challenging and sometimes impossible. We start our episode today with the Secretary General of the European Disability Forum.
2.7 million people with disabilities in Ukraine are exposed to the horror of war. They are more vulnerable than others. Shelters and escape routes are inaccessible for many of them. People are forced to stay in their apartments under bombing without care and medication. Evacuation transport is unable to take their assistive devices. Host countries lack accessible accommodations. Disability movement should stay for people with disabilities in Ukraine. We have to support them.
Today on the stream, what support do Ukrainians with disabilities need? Joining our conversation, we have Yulia, we have Milan, we have Anna. Good to have all of you on board. Yulia, welcome to the stream. Please introduce yourself to our stream audience.
I'm Yulia Sachuk, disability rights activist and head of the Ukrainian Organization of People with Disabilities, Fight for Right. And now I'm trying to coordinate emergency response by our organization and international partners for Ukrainians with disabilities.
Oh, thank you for joining us, Yulia. Hello, Milan. Good to see you. Please introduce yourself to our international viewers.
Hello. I'm Milan Čvěřepa, Director of Inclusion Europe, an advocacy organization representing people with intellectual disabilities and their families in 39 European countries, including Ukraine.
And Anna, thank you for joining the stream today. Please introduce yourself to our audience.
Thanks for having me. I'm Anna. I'm a disability activist. I'm supporting Yulia and Fight for Right in evacuating people with disabilities through my organization, the Partnership for Inclusive Disaster Strategies, as their Ukraine crisis focal point.
I feel like this is a must-watch conversation, because if you've been watching the evacuations from Ukraine, this is a part of the evacuations that we haven't been spending enough time on. YouTube. If you're on YouTube right now, comment section is right here. Be part of our conversation. Anna, when Gunter was talking a little bit earlier on, she sent us a video a few hours ago, you were nodding. What were you nodding? What did you recognise in her description of the situation that Ukrainians with disabilities currently find themselves in?
I think I was first nodding at her emphasis of the scale of this problem. People with disabilities are not a niche demographic. We make up 15% at the very least of the global population. And in Ukraine, we know we have at least 2.7 million people with disabilities who need aid in this humanitarian crisis. So it really is disappointing, as we'll talk about more, to see how these needs aren't being accommodated and treated as normal, as common, as a part of the human condition.
We're talking about a range of people with disabilities. So not, as Anna was saying, you can't just talk about a niche area of society in Ukraine. Milan, for instance, I know that you speak and you support a lot of people with disabilities, and you sent us some pictures of people with disabilities in the first few days, the first few weeks of the Ukraine war. I'm going to show some of these pictures. Can you explain what we're seeing and why we're seeing it? Go ahead, Milan.
Well, those are pictures from families who care for their sons and daughters with intellectual disabilities. There are some 260,000 people with intellectual disabilities in Ukraine. The organization we work with represents 14,000 families. And these are people who take care of their relatives with disabilities. These are people who cannot go to the normal bomb shelters, either because those are physically inaccessible or because it is hard for people who have autism, who have some other disabilities, to just be in these very crowded places. So these people, they are sheltering in their bathtubs, in their basement, in cellars, and those are the pictures that you can see from the first weeks of war.
Sheltering in place, and of course, if we've been watching the news, we know that sheltering in place can be incredibly dangerous. Yulia, I am wondering, from your perspective, if you look back from the past few weeks, past couple of months, and you look at the support that's been given by the government, Ukrainian government, for people with disabilities in Ukraine, what have you seen? How would you sum it up?
It's a very difficult country question, but first of all, we don't have Ukraine war, we have Russian war against Ukraine, first of all. And regarding actions of our government, I think now they are more coordinated than in the beginning, but I think that if voices of people with disabilities of our community were heard by our government before war, when we were trying to be more prepared, now we would have a better situation for Ukrainians with disabilities.
Yulia, can you give us one example that shows that maybe there could have been better preparation?
For example, when we talk about accessibility of bomb shelters or about support group of volunteers or social workers, in the beginning or like before war, we as an organization was trying to collect information from different countries, from international practices, and we had this information and we could provide this information for our authorities and responsible state officials. But we didn't have such a possibility.
And Femi,
if I may just follow up on...
Yeah, absolutely. Anna, you go first. Milan, you go second.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the more interesting angle at this point is not only what could the Ukrainian government have done to make this easier, but what could humanitarian organizations be doing now, today, not in the past, not would have, could have, should have, to ensure that Ukrainians with disabilities can get to a safe place. And the fact is that most of these humanitarian organizations are acting as if disability was invented the day Ukraine got invaded. They're not prepared. They don't have wheelchair-accessible vehicles. They don't know how to make shelters accessible for people with disabilities. Yulia and I heard just last week at the UN Protection Cluster meeting that 90% of existing shelters are inaccessible to people with mobility disabilities. And that's just unacceptable.
Anna, so how would you fix that? What's the easy fix for making shelters accessible? If we're talking about now, the needs right now, what would you do?
Well, what we're doing in our organization is ensuring that we're building in these needs from the beginning of our operations. And we're showing that it truly isn't that hard. Yulia's organization and mine are very low resource, but we're run by people with disabilities who understand these logistical needs and know to build them in. I think it's really a lack of expertise in humanitarian organizations and a lack of will and understanding of what needs to be done. I don't think it's a true lack of capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Milan, go ahead.
I just wanted to add to that there is also another part of this picture, and it is a huge number of people with disabilities who are in institutions, in segregated care institutions in Ukraine. And of course, that was already a problem before the war, as was the general lack of community-based services and the lack of resources for them, such as personal assistance and day centers and similar services. But the population of the institutions, which is anything starting from 30,000 upwards, there are very differing numbers, is in very difficult situation themselves. Some of these places we heard being evacuated, some of them we've heard have been directly attacked or taken hostage by the Russian forces. So that creates in itself a very, very grave situation and challenge for protection of lives of the people in those institutions as well.
That's a really unique aspect of this crisis.
Sure, absolutely.
The fact that not only are people with disabilities equally impacted, but the fact that Russian forces are in fact just specifically targeting locations like hospitals, like psychiatric facilities and other care homes, which makes it even more unforgivable that this isn't such a focus of the humanitarian response.
Let me just bring in, Yulia, if I may, let me just bring in one more voice while we're talking about institutions, because certainly in Ukraine, sometimes people with disabilities find themselves in institutional care rather than in community care. So I just want to bring in the voice of Karolina Kozik, who talks about the special needs of people with disabilities who find themselves in institutions at this very moment in Ukraine. Here she is.
People with disabilities and older people face serious risks in armed conflicts. Ukraine is no exception. For those who manage to flee, they face challenges in getting basic services, including accessible housing. What's particularly concerning is the fate of thousands who live in residential institutions and care homes in Ukraine. They are segregated from their communities and cannot easily access shelters, safe evacuations, and humanitarian assistance. It's fundamental that any action taken by governments and humanitarian organizations to assist people affected by the conflict includes people with disabilities and older people and addresses their specific needs.
Yulia, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm also wanted to stress the issue and the situation of people with intellectual and psychosocial disabilities. And even today, we have cases where near 40 people were evacuated from Donetsk region to more safe area. And we as a team were looking for people who can provide them basic medical need care, and nobody from international, big international humanitarian organization can't help us with that. So yeah, also these people, they are really restricted when we talk about cross-border and where to find personal assistant, caregiver. We don't have appropriate data regarding evacuation and situation of these people.
So, Guess, do you really think that international organizations who are helping Ukrainians who don't have disabilities are unable to help Ukrainians who do? Or are they just taking the easy route out? This is a really horrible question to ask you, Anna, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because we have to be really candid. We saw the pictures that Milan showed us. We've seen some of the images that people are struggling with right now with disabilities in Ukraine. Let's be super honest. Is it because they can't or because they won't?
I think it's absolutely explicitly clear that it's because they won't. You know, Yulia's organization, Fight for Right, and my organization, two organizations which have never worked in conflict zones, never worked in evacuations, were able to set up this operation, evacuating people with disabilities, in a matter of 1 week. And so far, we've evacuated 583 Ukrainians with disabilities. So we're showing that with very little funding, with very little capacity, that it is possible. So it's completely unthinkable that organizations like the Red Cross, like those in the UN protection cluster, can't be doing the same thing with the hundreds of millions of dollars that they've raised over the past month.
And to support this, I think
Milan, you go first, because I saw you nodding.
It's not only about evacuations, but providing support to those who remain in Ukraine.
Yes.
With either humanitarian packages, financial resources, or anything. There's a lot of things that can be done for those who are remaining there, which of course is majority of people with disabilities.
Yes. Milan, can I show you something?
We cannot see anything in that response either.
Yeah, Milan, let me show you something, because this is Natalia. She has three youngsters. She is in Kyiv because two of her youngsters have disabilities and they cannot be moved. This is what she told us a few hours ago. Have a listen, have a look. And then Milan, how do we help families like Natalia's get medicine? Here is Natalia.
Середня дитина на важкій інвалідності, синдром опіцяка відже, єдина людина в Україні з таким діалозом, як в нього. 24 лютого наше життя змінилося назавжди. Ми залишилися в Києві через важкий стан здоров'я Володимира, який не витримує довгої дороги. Вова епілепсія може статися в будь-який момент. Може підійматися температура, може сходити під себе. Вова, через психологічний стан не відчуває всього і не розуміє всього того, що відбувається навколо нас. Вова не вистачає ліків від епілепсії. Це дуже важливі для нього ліки. Але з ними дуже зараз складно в Києві. Немає реабілітації. Але зараз головне вижити. Головне, щоб Україна перемогла. Слава Україні!
So, Milan, you say it is possible to get medicine, to get supplies into Ukraine. Natalia's family needs medicine, needs supplies. They're dwindling. How do you do it? How does that happen?
We can...
Medicine is...
Yulia's got answers. Especially. Milan's got answers. I love a show that has answers. Milan, you start. Yulia, you pick up. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, medicine is a especially complicated issue and relies a lot on different authorizations and the authorities. And I think that's a special example of where the humanitarian organizations who have the expertise in doing this should be reaching out to the local disability organizations and taking care of these needs. The other side of the story is that these families also, besides medicine, need financial support to be able to buy food, to be able to buy any other basic things. Many of the families that we are working with, that we are supporting them, and thankfully to the support from many organizations and individuals in Europe, we are able to get them some financial support. And then let me stress, we are not a humanitarian organization either. We are doing this as a very emergency measure. And then these families are able to buy some basic needs or afford a couple of hours of somebody taking care of their family member with disabilities so they can get some rest or they can get and go buy basic stuff that they need. Many of these are elderly persons themselves, mostly mothers, let's say people in their 60s, some 70s, who have health issues themselves, and they are taking care of their family members with disabilities 24/7. So it is possible to arrange help like this. And it's definitely very important that the humanitarian organizations start reaching out to them directly as well.
Yulia, go ahead.
I want to add that we can try to help this family, but for first leg, we see that there is no for Ukrainians with disabilities coordination center or lack of coordination efforts, and this family, as many others, don't know whom they can ask about such support. We don't provide only technical evacuation. We provide Ukrainians with disabilities with medicines, financial support, even with volunteers who can provide food, water, and what people need. And also, what is important, medical evacuation by ambulances, which when it is needed. So we will try to contact this family and to help them as we can. But this is a real lack of coordination efforts of many international organizations, because, as I said, Ukrainians with disabilities, they very often think that they don't have chances to survive. They don't know whom they can ask about help. And they don't think that their lives are valuable to be saved by somebody. And this is a really big issue for many players and institutions in this area.
I think a really interesting thread to this story is the fact that the people who have stepped in are people like Yulia and I, who are part of the disability community. I'm a wheelchair user. Yulia's organization is majority women with disabilities. The aid that we have gotten is mostly from disability organizations in bordering countries like Poland, like Slovakia, where we've gotten these people who already have so little, people who are already marginalized, are the ones stepping in to help. And that's just not sustainable. We need more support.
This though, is the most extraordinary part of the issue that we're talking about, is that the disability communities within Ukraine, outside of Ukraine, got together to say, OK, we need to work out how do we help each other? How do we create the support networks? None of you were set up to do emergency support for people with disabilities from Ukraine, but you are all doing it brilliantly. Let me just bring in the World Federation of Deaf, because this is a great example of what the disability community themselves are doing. This is President Dr. Joseph. Let's just play the video. I will be his voice, Dr. Joseph. I have a doctorate that I didn't earn, but I will be your voice here. The World Federation of the Deaf works with deaf associations around the world to protect deaf people during disasters and armed conflicts. As the first shots were fired, the WFD reached out to our ordinary members, the Ukrainian Society of the Deaf. We are also in contact with deaf associations in neighbouring countries to support them with the deaf refugee situation. We will be orienting the UN High Commissioner on refugees of their obligations to deaf Ukrainian refugees, such as guaranteeing the right to access information and to seek refuge in another country. Now that is supreme networking. That's extraordinary. That's one community helping another community, connecting back, as you say, Anna, to the UN network, poking them to make sure that even when they get out of Ukraine, that as refugees, they are treated equitably. I want to play you one more video. And this comes from UNICEF. Yulia, I'm going to play this to you because there have been so much criticism about the lack of support from these big NGOs who are helping people who don't have disabilities get out of Ukraine, or even if they are stuck in Ukraine. This is Toby from UNICEF, and he has a very practical view of solving some of these problems. Here he is.
The conflict in Ukraine has devastated the lives of children. For children living with disabilities, they are even more vulnerable. That's why UNICEF is providing cash assistance to enable families to buy medical equipment, medical supplies, medicines, and even carers where necessary. We're also coordinating with child protection authorities inside Ukraine and those across the region to make that journey for children with disabilities just a little bit less horrific as they flee the conflict in Ukraine.
Yulia, giving cash, is that going to be helpful?
Yeah.
Just give the money.
Yes, I know about this initiative, I think that each support is helpful, and I think that comparatively to other organizations, UNICEF in Ukraine are quite active, and as minimum, I hear a lot about their work. At the same time, also want to mention that we don't have conflict in Ukraine, we have war. And this is also issue and question to UN treaty bodies, not to call situation in Ukraine conflict. It's real war and genocide of Ukrainians. So, and I also want to comment regarding deaf community. Now we cooperate with a really brilliant initiative. Yes, there is a big organization, but till today I haven't heard about World Federation of Deaf work. Mm-hmm. But for example, we cooperate with a deaf Ukrainian woman who now lives in London. And with the beginning of war, she with other colleagues and her friends in Ukraine started their support for Ukrainians, for women and with children with disabilities. And this is Sapaga Foundation. And, you know, little organization, little, I think they are not like officially organization, but initiative and brilliant initiative. And yeah, and I also want to stress that not only big organizations, but really who work in the field.
Yulia, this is a really good point. This is a really good point because we're right at the end of the show and we need so much more time for this conversation. But let me show you here on my laptop. Yulia's organization is called Fight for Right. You can support Ukrainians with disabilities during the war. If you are Ukrainian who needs help, there's a hotline for emergency cases. And I'm just going to say that this show was brought to you by an inspired pitch from Max, whose handle is Disability Equity, who is part of the disability community, which brings us full circles. Thank you so much, Max. Thank you, guests. I'll see you next time. Take care, everybody.